We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and our title tonight is, Are You a Client or a Partner? And that will sum up our subject. It is a choice we make in all of our life, but let's begin with a few examples and see. A person comes home, and he sees that they left the light in the car on. So he goes and turns off the light so the battery shouldn't die. He comes into the house and the garbage is piling up. He takes out the garbage. There are dishes in the sink. He washes the dishes in the sink. There's no supper to be had, so he goes to make supper. And then he says to his wife, I do an awful lot here. I just came home from a full day of work. I'm a little bit tired. It would be nice if the kids could take out the garbage. It would be nice if people would remember to turn off the light in the car. It would be nice if supper would be ready when I come home. There's a beautiful, small article that was written in Reader's Digest about 70 years ago, which describes a woman's job, how a woman should behave. So it's a short housekeeping tip. Remember, when your husband comes home, the children should be fed, bathed, their hair should be combed, they should be in pajamas, the house should be quiet. Remember, your husband works hard all day. When he comes home, he wants to see the children nice and clean and quiet. They should have already spent their energy so that they're ready to go to bed and he can spend quality time. When your husband sits down for dinner, stand next to him. Be ready to bring him the things he'd like and don't bother him with all the stories you have from throughout your day. He's tired. Remember, your husband works hard. Be there for him. Show him you love him and stand patiently at his side without talking too much. That's, in a nutshell, the description of the ideal wife by Reader's Digest 70 years ago. You guys can look it up. This isn't like a comic. This is how Reader's Digest gave tips to wives to be good housekeepers, to be good wives. Now, every guy sitting here is embarrassed to say, that sounds great. So not every guy is embarrassed.
It doesn't always happen much.
It's better than
maybe the wife doesn't feel good. He's awful.
So,
I was taught that saying everything is the man's fault. That's
so
like something in the
we are accustomed to a world that views us as clients, and we are very comfortable being clients. This has reached an extreme in our day and age. When I mentioned to children 15, 16 years ago, that I tried to get off the bus in the front to say thank you to the driver, they looked at me and said, why would you say thank you to a driver? And I said, he drove the bus for us, didn't he? And they said, he's getting paid. Why would you say thank you? This is where the generation was holding. These are kids who are parents now. I'm telling you a story from 16, 17 years ago. So it hasn't gotten any better since then. So we are accustomed to being clients, and we are accustomed to viewing the world as servicing our needs for we are paying. How many people say good morning? You know, I had a shocking conversation today. There's a place where I learn a few hours in the day, and there's a cleaner there. So I always tell him good morning, and I tell him good afternoon, and I wish him good night. Now, this cleaner comes from somewhere in Africa, as is evident by his skin color, and he does not wear a yarmulke. I don't even know if he's Jewish. I don't know. And today, as he was changing the bags in the garbage, I asked him, I said, did you hear the news? They're saying it's going to be cold on Thursday. They're actually saying there might be snow. So he smiles. And I asked him, do you have heating in your apartment? And he said, no. So I stopped what I was doing. And I looked at him and I wanted to make sure there wasn't miscommunication here. So I asked him, do you have a family? He said, I'm married. I said, do you have any source of heating in your apartment? And he said, no. So then I understood, we understood one another. Now what shocked me was, I hadn't thought to ask him earlier, and I don't think anyone else thought to ask him at all. So here we are, we're living our lives, we see one another almost on a daily basis, but we don't know. We don't know where someone else is holding, do we care? No, he's changing the garbage bags for me. He's cleaning the toilets for me. Why should I care if he has heat this coming Thursday when there's snow? Ah, but I should care. He's a human being, and I we have to shift from that perspective of being clients to the perspective of being partners. And in the home, this is pivotal. In the home, it's very easy to look at the relationship and say, this is what I put in, and this is what I expect to take out. And we all develop this picture in our minds of how we think a marriage should work and how we think the division of tasks should play itself out. We have to be open to the fact that life is not what we expect it to be. No one knows how things will play themselves out. But we have to be prepared to be partners. To be partners means I'm going to be flexible and work with my partner, seeing where I can cover the gaps. And sometimes people say, but I'm doing 90% of the work here. And I say, so you'll take 90% of the credit for the marriage succeeding. There are times in life where you do more of the work. And most of the time in life, you only think you're doing more of the work. Most of the time, it's just because we have no appreciation for what our spouse is doing that we feel like we're doing most of the work. If women would only be as open and honest about life as men are, then maybe we'd hear more than we'd be prepared to hear about how much they're doing during the day. We don't hear that, and we're comfortable not hearing that. Hashem created us different. We're very comfortable explaining why we're doing so much, and they express it differently. We had classes on that, on the forms of expression, male forms of expression and women forms of expression. So this is a paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift that can affect a lot of our lives. A person comes to the lunchroom. Does he wait for the food to be served, or does he think, how can I help to serve the food? In many things we do in life, sometimes you're on a bus. Someone has to get on the bus with a wheelchair. So you could look at that and say, that's not my wheelchair. Or you could look at that and say, let me help him out. The person needs help. I want to add one more point. I was on a bus a few months ago, and there was a man in a wheelchair, and someone was helping him on the bus. And he was yelling at the guy, shift it this way, shift it that way, push it this way, push it that way. And I was thinking to myself, poor kid. I guess that's his grandfather, but it can't be fun to help a guy on the bus like that. So I stood with my bag next to the man in the wheelchair, and a minute later I see the kid get off the bus. And then it started seeming like the kid never met this guy before. He was just helping him on the bus. So I stayed wondering what was really going on there, and the bus starts driving. And a minute after the bus starts driving, the guy looks at me and starts yelling at me and telling me how to set up his wheelchair so he'll be stable with the bus moving. So I said to myself, okay, now everyone on the bus thinks it's my grandfather, right? And I started helping him set up his wheelchair as he's telling me that I'm not doing right. You know, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. Well, let's remember how much frustration a person has being in a wheelchair. Let's remember how difficult his life is. If he has no one there with him on that bus, so then it's not easy leading a life that way, being at the mercy of other people. So it's obviously not pleasant to be yelled at, but if we take the broader perspective, he has it much harder than whoever's going to help him for a few minutes. And I tried helping him with a smile, with everything on, off, shifting, and it's not hard when you know you're not going to see him in a half hour, you know. It's not hard to smile at a person like that. But then I asked myself, why was it difficult to smile? Because if we feel like someone's demanding something of us, then we're much less inclined to do it. If he wouldn't have asked, I would have been very happy to do everything I could to make his ride more pleasant. But when he demanded it and yelled at me, so then I had to force myself to smile and do it. So when we enter marriage, very often demands are made on us. And sometimes a person can even feel like all of married life is about demands. And I just want to paint the picture for you for a second. Imagine you get married and everything's beautiful and wonderful and great. So that's an imagination, right? Because in reality, there are beautiful components and there are difficult components. It's not just beautiful and wonderful and great. It's beautiful and wonderful and great and difficult and complicated and complex and frustrating and beautiful and wonderful and great. It's both. And then if you're fortunate and you're blessed, so you have child number one. And if you're fortunate and blessed, you have child number two. And if you're fortunate and blessed, you have child number three. And let's imagine you have three children under the age of 5 or 6. So all the children know how to do is take. They'll get up in the middle of the night, they'll ask you for things. They'll get up in the middle of the day, they'll ask you for things. Or, you know, I once had a very traumatic experience. A close relative of mine was by our house for a Shabbos meal. And he said a line to me he should have never said. And it changed my perspective, I think, for life. He said to me at one point during the meal, he said to me, "You know, you can't go 20 seconds without a child asking you for something. Your average is somewhere between 9 and 12 seconds. So this guy is big into math. But what's terrible about that is that I never noticed that. I was always thinking, great, I have kids, they ask me for things, so I'm passing this to them, answering that. When someone tells you, you don't have 9 seconds, you can't eat 3 bites of food without having to answer a child, suddenly you see it differently, and you try to tell yourself, don't look at it that way, right? It's a blessing, don't look at it that way. Sometimes you're trying to finish the rice, and it takes you about 20 minutes to finish a little portion of rice, so you start thinking, hey, he's got a point, right? But it is a blessing. And yet there are times when children are not yet at an age where they can help. There are times, a year or two or three, where a person can feel like all of life is just doing other people's demands. I'm going to work. I'm coming back home. I'm helping the kids. I'm helping my wife. All I'm doing is working. By the time I finish doing everything I should be doing, I got to go to bed and get up for another day of working. So the truth is it's a blessing. If a person has a wife and children, it's a blessing. But it's also difficult. It's difficult. So I'm just pointing out, it shifts. As the kids grow older, you're still doing a lot, but it shifts. And the first thing that people have to shift on, the first paradigm shift, is that you're coming home to your second job. You're a partner. Man would like to come home to his castle. And man is coming home to his second job. So what does the average man say? But I need a castle. I'm tired at the end of the day. Well, guess what? So is she. She's been working hard too. You come home in the evening, you have to be prepared. This is job number two. Now you're entering job of being husband and Abba. That means you have to have patience to listen to your wife's frustrations, how many things she went wrong today. It means you have to have patience to deal with the garbage that was not taken out, the dishes that were not done. The person says, but I remember my parents. It wasn't that way. You remember your parents when you were older. You remember your parents at a later stage in life. There's a large chunk of time where a person has to know that you're coming from one job into another job. And it's a blessing. It's a blessing. And if we have that shift in outlook, and if we force ourselves to smile, initially you have to force yourself to smile. Yes. Then le'at le'at, you get accustomed to it. And it is a blessing. It's the greatest blessing. So again, in many things in life, we have a choice. Are we the client or the partner? The client or the partner? Your spouse has a test to take. Do you say, but I thought we were going to spend the night together? Or do you say, how can I help you so that you'll be able to focus for the test? This question comes up many times in a marriage. When things are difficult for my spouse, do I make my demands or am I a partner? When there are demands that come to me that I feel like really should not be coming my way, shouldn't you be taking care of that? Am I a client or am I a partner? We always want to be a client. It's much more comfortable being served. But if we want a real relationship, we have to be a partner. We want to have a partner, and we have to learn to become a partner. And it's much harder than we imagine. It's very tempting to say, this is within my rights. Why shouldn't I demand this? Or why should I give in on this? That's not the approach. I want to end with a story. I was once dating a girl who told me this story about herself. I think it's a great story. She said that in her mind, marriage has to be like her first roommate. She came into to her first dorm room. And her roommate welcomes her with a smile. And then she says to her, I want you to know, there is something that really upsets me and gets me annoyed.
The roommate said it.
There's something that really upsets me and gets me annoyed, and I don't want you to do it. Here's the deal. You might ask me, can I use your comb? Can I use your hair dryer? Can I use your cell phone? You might ask me any one of those things, and that annoys me because we're here together, and you're welcome to use everything that's mine. Use it and feel comfortable. We're here together. Don't ask. Use it. We're here as roommates. So if we can approach marriage and think for a minute, we're partners. This is ours. People sometimes ask, can couples have separate bank accounts? And I always say, I can't answer that. I only know one way of doing marriage, having one bank account. Can a marriage work with separate bank accounts? I don't know. I don't know how couples work that way. I don't know if you're getting married, then you should trust one another and you should be building everything together. I'm not saying that that's the only system that works. I'm saying it's the only system I know of. I don't know of another system. I believe that couples have to build together. We are partners. I'd like to be a client. It would be very nice to say, I have $50 million in the bank account in Switzerland. How much do we need per year? 50,000 shekel? I'll transfer it. What do you need to be on my Switzerland account? I do not have $50 million. I do not have a Swiss bank account. But in case your imaginations were wondering. But I'm saying it's very comfortable to say, you know, I'll transfer the money into our joint account when it's necessary. I think that in everything, we have to work to be partners and build together. And it is a paradigm shift to shift from being a client to being a partner, to be willing to forgo what I feel is entitled to me. But when we make that shift, that's when we start building something together.